Welcome to Broken Muscle Radio. I'm Chet Majaria, here with my co-host, Becca. Say hi, Becca.
Hey, everybody.
We just wanted to give you a little rundown before we get started speaking to Jill Miller about a few of the things that have been happening here at Broken Muscle and some cool stuff that you can look out for. So, Becca, what's going on in the next week or so? What have people got to look forward to?
A lot of good stuff. I would say one of the big things is that we're going to have an article from Erwan Lacour, who's the founder of MoveNat. And if you don't know, we actually have a whole natural movement section that's articles from Erwan and his coaches that we run articles every week now talking all about natural movement and incorporating that into your training.
That's super cool. Anything else that's going to catch people's attention?
Yeah. So right now, our featured coach is Zach Evanesh. So we have a free 4-week training plan from Zach currently. And then after that, we're going to be featuring Max Schenck, which you may have seen some crazy videos of Max doing crazy things with kettlebells on the internet. And so if you follow his system, maybe you can be half as crazy as Max.
The ultimate athlete.
Yes, exactly. Learn how to be the ultimate athlete.
And yes, we're just about to get started chatting to Jill Miller. I think all of you will find that a fascinating, really, really cool discussion. But just wanted to give you a bit of a rundown on where you can find some of our previous podcasts.
Yeah, so if you go to the main site and you see the little menu across the top, you see the word knowledge. If you click on the word knowledge and then scroll down a bunch until you see our little logo, which is the weightlifting microphone. So when you see the weightlifting microphone, you can start clicking.
And we also have a couple of excellent guests lined up after Jill as well. In April, we're going to be chatting to Dr. Levi Harrison. He's an orthopedic surgeon, and he's got a bunch of cool stuff on the website on Breaking Muscle regarding injury prevention. So great to check that out before you listen to the podcast and give you a bit of background. And we also, in May, will be speaking to John Rusin. He's a talented man. He's a physical therapist. He's an FMS guy. And if you want to do a bit more research on him, he's got a whole bunch of hypertrophy workouts on Breaking Muscle. So give them a go as well.
All right. Without further ado, here's our interview with Jill Miller. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Breaking Muscle Radio. And with me is our co-host, Chet Majaria. Say hello, Chet.
Hey, this is Chet Majaria.
All right, so today we have with us one of the world's leading experts on yoga, self-massage, and all that crazy fascia stuff. She's the creator of Yoga Tune-Up and the Role Model Method. The Role Model is also the name of her new book. And along with Mobility Wad guru Kelly Starrett, she put together a combination of self-care tools and DVDs called Treat While You Train. So basically, she's the person you want to go to when you need help with everything from chronic pain to mobility limitations to improving your performance. So let's get chatting with none other than Jill Miller. Welcome, Jill.
Becca, welcome. Chet, thank you so much for having me.
Yes, welcome.
Right. So, Jill, as Becca said, you're the founder of Yoga Tune-Up, and, of course, you come from a yoga background. Could you tell us a little bit about what has basically, I guess, been a lifelong study of yoga and anatomy for you? How did that come about, and what style of yoga do you or did you practice?
You know, I have practiced yoga for, I don't know, 30-something years, but interestingly enough, my work now is hardly that. It doesn't resemble yoga. In fact, I've disassembled yoga, which is the tune-up portion of all my programming. I spend a lot of time disassembling human movement to provide students and people interested in their bodies the basics of how your body moves so that you can do whatever you do better and best. And the way I came about to doing that was because I literally stretched myself from limb to limb doing too much yoga. I started practicing when I was about 11 or 12 years old. I grew up in a solar home in Santa Fe, New Mexico, off the grid. And we didn't have, I mean, first of all, Santa Fe was a super hippie, new age community. So yoga was everywhere. But I started learning from videos. My mom brought home the Jane Fonda workout and the Raquel Welch yoga video. And I took to them. I loved doing these videos with her. But, you know, she was a fly-by-night type of exerciser. She was into it for 2 weeks, but I became addicted. I literally became addicted to exercise. And actually that addiction to exercise was dovetailing at the time with a full-blown eating disorder. I started starving myself, became anorexic, and shortly thereafter I became bulimic. So my awakening into the movement arts was actually coupled with a very profound psychological disease that I'm very happy that I've healed from. But it's interesting that, you know, my journey into my body was a very, very disordered one. And I developed my programming out of a need to heal myself. And the role model method, which is the therapy ball work that I teach, is the medication, literally, that I use to deal with my anxiety. And it just so happens that the medication, these therapy balls and these self-massage techniques, also help with musculoskeletal issues. And hence, this is the sort of the short version of how this all came into being.
You know, it's interesting that dichotomy of something that could be healthy also being potentially very unhealthy. And I think I see the mobility movement really growing because of people not being able to find that balance, whether it's CrossFit or powerlifting or yoga. They're realizing they've gone to too far of an extreme in kind of a strange self-medication, and then they're looking for that balance.
Yeah, well, we use our movement practices to... Sometimes you can say, you know, we're running from something and we're running towards something at the same time. But it can be this very strange self-mutilation of using your practice to escape yourself in a way. And so I'm on that repair train and that recovery train now for sure. And I really try to play around with my dosages so that I can live a balanced in the most balanced way as possible. But it's possible to overdo anything. It's possible to overdo self-massage, as those of you who are listening who are fans of my work have, like, you know, oh, I spent 25 minutes on one spot. It's like, oh, that might have been a little too long. You know, it's like too much of a good thing is just simply too much. But it's also fun to be the laboratory and to be experimenting. So I never poo-poo anyone who is, you know, willing to go there. But once you've gone there and you feel not great because of what your practice has done to you, whatever that practice is, whether it's lifting or stretching or self-massage or even too much meditation, believe it or not, Becca, too much meditation will leave you with lag time. You'll be actually less able to react to even phraseology that comes at you, let alone being able to move with fast twitch and rapid response.
Huh.
I think that's such, I think that's such
too
a
much
pertinent question.
What's that?
I was just saying, no, I think that's such a pertinent question for pretty much every athlete listening to this, and which is probably going to open up a massive can of worms. But where does an athlete start to self-manage their dosages then, if you like? I mean, we could start with rolling, I guess, but, you know, how does that process begin in someone's mind?
Well, first you got to start. You have to get on the ball, literally, and start to try to massage into, let's just say, so first of all, the role model balls, they're four different tools. They're grippy, pliable massage tools. So I've designed tools that I think are very helpful to most human tissue. This is really a both a mass market product, and it's also making a lot of waves in the clinical set and in the athlete set. So somehow moms, you know, grandmoms and granddads who are not necessarily very active are finding that they can use these balls comfortably, but also Olympians, NFL sportsmen, professional soccer players, snowboarders, you name it, CrossFitters up and down the chain are using these with great efficacy. So I've tried to just create a product that was inexpensive that so many different people can use.
Right.
Where do you start? You start by... One of the main features that I love about my work and the way I encourage people to use my work is not just to use the ball to, like a pill to get rid of pain, but also ultimately to map yourself better. I'm very interested in people improving their body sense, their proprioception, their ability to sense their body in space and locate tissue, so that ultimately you become more empowered by knowing where your body parts are and how they should relate, how they relate to one another. And that then feeds into the context of your sport. So, yes, I might have some serious pain going on in the outside of my knee or in my lower back, and I need to really understand how the whole body is a host for the dysfunction and not just the pain in my knee or the pain in my back. So the therapy ball work, while you can probably stick a ball in the place that hurts, the place that hurts isn't always necessarily the place that's going to get you the results or the relief or release of the issue that's really playing the major role in your pain or your dysfunction. So I encourage people to look at the whole body as a host, and the whole body being the host means your breathing has to be functional and excellent. Your ability to switch into relaxation states is also very important. The therapy balls moving into different parts of your body is also super important. And then your overall posture and behavior in life needs to be looked at, because a lot of times it's not what you're doing on the field that's hurting you. It's how you're sitting with your legs crossed. It's how you're lifting your children. It's how you're walking down the street that may be setting you up for the blowout that you had, you know, playing your weekend racket sport.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you spend most of your week not actually at your sport. You're spending most of your time doing those other things that you mentioned. How often do you see that something really is related to an acute problem versus an overall kind of lifestyle reevaluation that needs to happen?
Well, it's interesting. I'll use myself as an example, because 2 days after my book was published, now, I have a year-old daughter. I keep thinking, I just had a baby, but it was a year ago that I had a daughter. And actually, I wrote the role model as soon as I signed the contract with Victory Belt. I was like, oh, my God, I got to get this book out before I get the baby out. And so I wrote the book for the 9 months or 10 months of gestation. And then I wasn't finished. She was born. And so for the next 6 months of her life, the first 6 months of her life, I wrote every single day. I nursed her, whatever, six to eight times a day, and was going back and forth between nursing her, handling her, you know, losing sleep by the day, and writing the book. And I wrote the book at my laptop, and I stand when I write. And this is all important because it sets up the stage for an acute injury that I got. So the role model comes out, and 2 days later, I fall. I fell on my right hand, and I'm right hand dominant. I fell on my hand, and I fell up the stairs. Okay, so it wasn't like a horrible fall. I like fell down 90 stairs. I fell up the stairs, and my hand landed on one step. But nonetheless, it was a fall, and it was a jar. And I thought, oh, that might not be good on my shoulder. Like, that was my thought. Anyhow, 2 days later, I started to have acute pain in my wrist that I've never experienced in my life. And then I got on a plane, and I traveled with her to Austin. I started promoting my book, teaching workshops, and so on and so on. I finally went to an orthopedist because I couldn't rub this one out. This was not something that my therapy balls were able to tackle. I had a tendon issue that is very common with new mothers. It's called de Quervain syndrome. It's a tenosynovitis. It's an inflammation of the mini retinaculum that surrounds the tendons of the thumb, and it was engorged with fluid, and the tendons within were extremely inflamed and stiff. And, you know, that came about for a few different reasons, and I've been doing treatment. It's a very, very persistent injury because you are a human because you have an opposable thumb. And you try changing a diaper or nursing without using a thumb, it is very difficult. So to get back to the acute injury thing, in the acute phase, a therapy ball on the actual injury site which, by the way, I never put the ball on the actual injury site because I knew better, is the worst idea possible. But using the therapy balls on the tissues that are uptown or downtown of the issue can help to draw fluids out of that inflammation site and hasten the progression of compensation, because compensation is inevitably going to happen when muscles and myofascial interrelationships are shut down. And it needed to get shut down. These tendons needed to get shut down in order for that inflammation to dissipate. So the... You know, in acute injury, you literally need to back off and let that stuff cool down, mobilizing stuff that's around it, surrounding tissues, and so on. And Chet, to get back to your original question, which was, I just went on a complete ramble. Where are we? I have an answer, but I'm just got lost.
Basically, acute versus lifestyle. Like, is there a difference between acute?
Yes. Here we go. So the lifestyle of a writer who uses her right thumb constantly on the computer pad and uses her right hand constantly to lift and lower her child, and who has a ton of relaxin in her system because she's nursing.
Right.
So there were a million things that were setting me up for the condition when I fell. I don't think I would have had it had I not fallen, but the fall blew it out. So I was already creating lifestyle conditions that were welcoming a really painful condition. So there it is. The lifestyle helped create this acute condition for me. Now the lifestyle of being a left-handed person is helping to lessen that. And anyway, but it's fun because the role model, she also can get injured too. I mean, accidents do happen, and it's what you do with that accident, and it's what you do with yourself once you're hurt that I think really sets the stage for whether there's more problems. So I could have a lot of pain in my elbow and shoulder right now, and I don't, because I use my therapy balls, I practice what I preach, so that I don't end up creating more problems because of one issue. And everybody can do that. If you know you have compensation issues because you twisted your ankle 19 times playing soccer as a kid, you may need to do a little bit more, have more awareness of that foot, leg, knee, hip, et cetera, so that you're not making matters worse. And on the other hand, you need to look at the other side of the body that more than likely you spend more time on in order to avoid the area of weakness that was created by those sprains.
Yeah, because, really our bodies are a map of our history of mishaps, right?
Aw, we're just a naughty, naughty mess. You are a naughty, naughty mess, all of you.
I love that idea, Jill, of like empowering the athlete and sort of allowing them to realize that their history, their lifestyle and all that kind of stuff has a major play in terms of, what happens, be it an injury or something, and then how to deal with it as well. And just forming those links between, the rest of their life and things that happen, I guess, forming those connections. And we also poked at that idea, I think, a little bit earlier when you were speaking about that the whole body kind of houses anything that happens, and it's important even when we're treating it to think about the whole body. And in terms of forming links as well, I think one of the other ways you've been described is as a pioneer in forging links between fitness and yoga and massage and pain management. And I know we've kind of started on that idea, but can you expand a little bit more on it?
On being a bridge builder between these different spaces?
Exactly.
Yeah, happily. I met my yoga mentor when I was 19 years old, and his name is Glenn Black, and he's a recluse. He lives up in upstate New York or on a boat somewhere in the Caribbean. He's just a fascinating body master. And when I first started working with Glenn, I worked up with him at the Omega Institute for Holistic Studies. It's this retreat center in upstate New York. And I lived in a tent all summer, and I worked in their sundry store. I sold toothpaste to Deepak Chopra, and flashlights to Ram Dass and all these sort of major people in the New Age wellness living movement. And as a staffer there, we got to have these free classes. And Glenn was the teacher of yoga in these free classes. And I used to go to his classes in the morning very early. And he was also the most amazing body worker the first body worker I'd ever worked with. But since then, I've still never found anybody who surpasses his hands-on skills. And he taught a form of massage called body tuning, which is actually an orthopedic medical massage, physical therapy approach pioneered by a gentleman in New York City named Shmuel Tatz, who has a studio there. It's called Body Tuning. You can look at bodytuning.us. Anyway, Glenn was his protege, and Glenn also was a master of Iyengar yoga. He'd studied with Iyengar in India. And so when I'd go to Glenn's classes in the morning, we would do not just Iyengar yoga, because he's not aligned with any institution. We would do yoga, but we would also do bizarre human movement and mobility exercises, that things that you are inhuman. You cannot even imagine the joint movements that we were doing. Very playful, very, I don't want to say eye-opening, but body eye-opening. I mean, they literally unraveled all movement restrictions of every single joint. And I learned this from him for years. He also would be extremely displeased with how we were performing movement or yoga asana. He would literally get disgusted, and he would say, stop. And then he would throw you down on the floor and start doing hands-on treatment to the body parts that he knew were not participating well in the movements that he was teaching. Mm-hmm. And then he would have us do those same hands-on treatments on one another and then get back up and perform the pose or the movement or what have you. And so when I really started doing yoga studies formally with him, they were always linked to body work. They were always linked to massage. And so years later, when I started teaching is when really this all started to make sense to me. Because when I started teaching, I started seeing the same issues in my students. And I couldn't live with myself if I didn't give them tools to make their shoulders move better or stabilize better. I couldn't live with myself if I kept seeing their spines, you know, all flexed when they were doing downward facing dog or just hyperextended doing, you know, even standing poses like Tadasana, simple posture. And so I had to figure out a way to improve their mapping of themselves. And so the therapy balls that I used became that hands-off way where I could do this on scale. I could do this with 20, 30, 50, hundreds of people in a classroom or through my media. I could rest, you know, go to sleep at night knowing that ethically I was doing the right thing by giving people a sense of their body, and so they didn't need me to constantly cue them. They could finally cue themselves. They could sense it themselves that their positions were more efficient for the context of the movement that they were doing. And so this is why also the clinical space, a lot of the pain management relationships I have with different physical therapists or orthopedists or different hospital institutions that we build programming for like our work, because we empower people to be their own role model and not to necessarily have to constantly rely on an outside eye to give them that perspective. Isn't it great if you have you have enough intelligence to have your own perspective on your movement practice? I mean, we're always going to need an outside eye, but it should be for literally for a tune-up, and then you're on your way doing your own thing better.
That was brilliant. Yeah, thank you.
Actually, there's one more part of that which I should throw in, which is that along the way, I met an incredible anatomy master named Gil Headley. And Gil is a pioneer in the fascia space, I would say. He's also just a pioneer in the humanism space. He leads Compassionate Cadaver Labs all over the world. And I've had the privilege of studying with him multiple times and dissecting human bodies. And being able to look under the hood, instead of making assumptions that from based on what my what I was feeling in my body or what I, you know, or the communication that I had between my students, I finally had the opportunity with my own hands and tools to be able to disassemble the human structure and look at its interrelatedness and look at the constant interconnections that all systems and structures play upon one another. So that's been a really, really big part of my informative path, and that also led me to end up presenting at the International Fascia Research Congress a case study a couple of years ago, and so that's part of those links, I think, those bridges that you're referring to, Chet.
Definitely, and now I have a good understanding of where the name role model comes from as well. That's really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's spelled
yeah.
R-O-L-L, in case anybody was wondering.
I finally get it. I'm a bit slow.
Thank you.
And then there's also the Drool model.
Well, the Drool model. Thank you, Deca. Thank you for following my my social media. Well, the Drool model is my daughter.
So the fascia thing. So.
Yes.
How is it that we've been studying anatomy forever, and in my high school anatomy class, I never heard of fascia, and now it's like all about fascia. Like, what is it, and how is it we didn't know it was in there?
I know, it's so unfair, right? When I first started studying with Glenn, when I was 19, he was always talking about fascia, and that's where I first heard the term myself. I was actually going to be a microbiology major. I was fascinated with human anatomy and also disease. I loved disease and microbes and fungus, all the gross stuff. I love that stuff. Anyway, that's an aside. Honestly, the pioneers like Gill and Tom Myers and Robert Schleip and Thomas Finley, folks who have a little bit more of a public profile or public platform, have been able to finally, and my friend Sue Hitzman as well with the MELT method, have been able, which has been a huge crossover methodology into the mainstream mm-hmm. regarding fascia, have been able to make some noise about the seam structure of your body. So I call fascia your seam structure. Fascia is the whole body-wide web of extra soft tissue that links different structures to one another and also provides the scaffolding for structures to have structure in your body. It's also a highway for vasculature. It's an embedment for the largest number of proprioceptive or sensing neurons in your body. It also has a lot of immunological repercussions or immunological helpness. What's the word for that? What's the helpness? Helpness is the word for that. But I think you get my point. So the old saying goes is, you know, you just throw the white stuff into the garbage pail so that you can look at the simplicity of a muscle or the simplicity of a nerve or the simplicity of a vein or a capillary, what have you. But what about all this netting that is helping things get from one structure to another? So that's the fascia. Your fascia really gives your body its form and its shape. And it can be an obstacle to movement because fascia is your is the tissue that helps to heal and repair you. So if you're not moving very much, your body will adapt to non-movement. It will get stiff in a certain area, and that stiffness is actually an overgrowth of collagen in that area, not permitting tissues to move relative to one another. So in terms of sports training, and you're looking to increase your mobility, a lot of times the lack of mobility, one, can be that you have bones who have a limitation to their articulation. Everybody's bones have a limitation to their ability to move relative to one another. But then you have soft tissue structures like ligaments, tendons, or myotendinous junctions that are also operating at those jointy areas. And then you have the fascias, the extra soft tissues that are a part and parcel of that same structure. And so the ability to influence a normalized length of those tissues can be done through mobility work and hastened by, augmented by, specific soft tissue manipulation using myofascial release tools like the role model balls.
Thanks, Joel. That's really interesting. I think, do you think that there is, or there's starting to become an overemphasis on fascia now that it's coming, into the mainstream, for want of a better way of putting it? It seems to me that, there's just kind of a few camps in the industry of people that perhaps think it's the be all and end all and have kind of cottoned onto that fact a little bit too much. And then, people like yourselves who are explaining to people that there's a bigger picture involved. You think there's a bit of an overstep there?
I don't know. You know what? I get asked this question a lot, and I'm like scratching my head because I don't know anybody who only thinks that it's all fascia. But I do know a lot of people who only think that it's all muscle all the time, or it's all nervous system all the time.
Right.
You know, all these structures are interdependent on one another. And so none of them are the king, in my opinion. I mean, actually, I think your hormones are the king. But I haven't said, from what I know, but I'm not going to say, I didn't just say that. Or maybe it's the queen. So, everything is interdependent on everything else. So, but there is this, I have heard some people like, oh, well, this fascia thing is really silly. Like there's this backlash or this backfash against fascia. It's just silliness. It's like, it's there. It inhibits you. If your fascias are going to inhibit your, the ability for your muscle to grow in its optimal, let's say, fascial envelope. If I have restrictions in my fascia, I'm going to lose force production, and I'm also going to lose elasticity. I'm going to lose my ability to have recoil. So it's, to me, there's a lot of, it's just a silly conversation because it exists, but so does the myo. You know, the muscle exists too, and your cartilage is not a non-existent thing either. And so I guess that's how I answer that. I'm like, okay, too much of anything, too much belief, Chet, can be harmful as well, right?
True, yeah.
We cycle back to the beginning of our conversation. So be open to the fact that the 70 trillion cells in our body, and, we know less about ourselves than we know the universe, and I'm going to go a little astronomical in that way. I think that we don't know everything that we know, and maybe turn on your humility meter a little bit and open up to the fact that there are things you don't know about yourself that we'll never know. I mean, right now, one of the biggest interests to me is the fact that, bacteria outnumber the rest of the important cells of your body that we've been studying forever. It's like bacteria are seen to be ruling the roost, according to some papers, too. So who's to say who's right and who's wrong and what's right and what's wrong?
Well, it all comes down to self-exploration and figuring out, like you were saying, building your body's eye and your own self-awareness and figuring out what works for you and your goals and your body, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think just remaining open to the fact that we're under the influence of so many different systems and inhabitants that we really don't know that much about.
So what makes, you mentioned now your role model method, and you have yoga tune-up therapy balls, you have role model therapy balls. What makes what you're doing and your balls unique?
Well, let me clarify, because I did start off in the marketplace with something called a yoga tune-up therapy ball. And as we were using this particular grippy, pliable ball that's a little smaller than a tennis ball, we started getting requests from athletes to have a bigger ball. And so we ended up creating a whole line of balls that could fit into different areas of your body better, depending on your mass, depending on your desired pressure. And when I created the role model book, we realized that all of the balls really, we should just call them all, they're the role model therapy balls. And then within the role model therapy balls, we have four different balls. The smallest is the yoga tune-up ball. The medium size, which is just a little larger than a lacrosse ball, is called a therapy ball plus. There's a ball a little smaller than a softball called an alpha ball. And then there's a extra large, hollow, air-filled, grippy, pliable ball. And the reason you keep hearing me say grippy and pliable again and again is because the grippiness of each of these balls is critical for creating tissue shear. And that is that the balls have so much texture to them, like a rubber Velcro. They stick to your skin. And that stick of the ball can then transition the skin and the fatty layer, the superficial fascia that's literally tethered to your skin, and it will create a soft tissue scraping sensation that transitions that layer over deeper layers of deep fascia and then your myofascias. So you get a very, very complete rub down from surface to deep because of the way the balls grip at your tissues. Slicker balls like tennis balls or golf balls, they don't have that ability to make grip. Lacrosse balls actually do. Lacrosse balls have a lot of grip. All the balls are also pliable. The rubber, when you first get them, they're a little firm, but they break down quickly, and they should break down. They break down in order for the balls to be able to roll up and around bony prominences. Remember I was talking about joints a little bit ago, Chet? I was describing all the articulations of joints. Joints are where movement happens.
Right.
So if we have untenable stiffness at joints, we actually need to use a tool that can help detail the inappropriate tension around joints. A hard ball will simply abut against the bony prominence. It will bruise. It will create skin pinching. It will irritate. The rubber of our balls compresses to the shape of your bones. It literally conforms to your form. And so the grippiness is able to take effect and create that shear and awaken proprioceptive nerve endings, help to increase the perfusion or the nutrition getting to these structures so that they can grow appropriately or break down appropriately. So the grippiness, the pliability, these are both key. Things like foam rollers are too hard and too large to get into these joint junctions. Lacrosse balls, golf balls, extremely hard and annoying at these joint junctions. And then the last benefit is that they're portable. You know, it's really hard to take your foam roller with you in an airplane seat or a car seat, but all of the role model balls are seat-friendly, so to speak, so they're on the go, and they can fit into your purse, your gym bag, or what have you. The last ball, the Gorgeous ball, is inflated, so you can always deflate it. But that ball is the ball that I use on abdomens, deep anterior pelvic work, as well as anterior chest, rib cage, breasts, sternum, helping to facilitate better breathing practices, as well as managing scar tissues on the abdomen, which are extremely common, or scar tissues in the chest area, which are extremely common, heart surgeries, breast surgeries, and so on. So all of the tools are grippy, pliable, portable. And then lastly, because I'm a salesman, I have to tell you they're affordable. It's a lot cheaper to use these tools than it is to renew your prescriptions for Oxy or to get, to have surgery or to have an MRI. You know, these are your little rubber drugs, and everyone should have them in their movement medicine cabinet.
Little rubber drugs, I like that. that's really good and useful information, Jill. Thanks. It's really interesting to sort of find out and understand how the device that you're using actually impacts the mechanics of how you roll so significantly. And
there was one.
No, sorry, Jill. Please carry on.
There was one when I was at the Fascia Congress. The guy presenting directly across from me was, the case study I presented at the Fascia Congress was about a student of mine who I've been working with for 8 years, who has a disease called Charcot-Marie-Tooth disease, which is a peripheral neuropathy. And in this particular peripheral neuropathy, all of the peripheral nerves become unmyelinated, meaning they lose their protective sheath. And when a nerve loses its protective sheath, it becomes very dysfunctional. It also becomes a pain sensor. And so folks who have this particular disease have withering in their fingers, their toes, their wrists, their ankles, their lower legs, their forearms, and have a very difficult time walking, and, of course, are on a ton of painkillers. And I use the yoga tune-up therapy balls and corrective movements, yoga tune-up movement, mobility exercises, strengthening exercises with Eric to help him progress out of that disease. Now, I'm circling back to the tools in a second here, Chet. I just wanted to point out the relationship to this study that was literally across the way from me in poster form. So, by the way, Eric was able to get off of all of his intense overprescribed pain medications, including the highest dose of fentanyl that is legal, by using the methods, which is why I ended up presenting at the conference. He also ended up getting out of leg braces and wearing minimus tennis shoes that he can lace up himself now, which was unthinkable before. But he used these soft tools. And so the guy presenting across from me had done a study. He works with cerebral palsy and teaches parents how to do massage on their children with cerebral palsy. And so he did a study on tools, on efficacy of tools. And what he found was that hard tools did not have the depth of penetration, nor did it have the same nerve excitation, the correct nerve excitation, as did the softer tools, or the soft tools. And when I say correct nerve excitation, I'm talking about exciting proprioceptive nerve endings that end up actually shutting down your pain sensing. So when you use a hard tool, what happens is muscle spindles within your muscles, they brace, they inhibit the tool from entering, because the body actually fears it's going to be hurt. And so it protects itself by stiffening. So when you stick a hard tool on your butt, you're like, oh man, that's tight. I can really feel that. The reason, one of the big reasons why you feel it's tight and it hurts and you can feel that, is because your body is actually unconsciously guarding to prevent the ball from entering you. When you have a softer tool, it confuses the muscle spindle enough so that it stays relaxed. And so the tool actually goes to the area, goes deeper into the legitimate stiffness, or the the decades of stiffness, or the weeks of stiffness, or the new stiffness that you're trying to ameliorate, whereas a harder tool is having to sort of crack through the more superficial layers that are guarding to prevent you from getting to the issue. So that's one of the reasons why I'm a huge fan of soft tools, and the fact that I met this scientist and researcher, Leonid Bloom, by the way, is his name, was really inspiring for me to keep forging ahead in the soft tool space that I, the soft tool products that I develop.
I was just thinking, what you were saying, Jill, reminded me a lot of when I read Sue Hitzman's book, Melt Method, and she advocates that you shouldn't feel pain when you're rolling. And then there's a lot of people who talk about good pain versus bad pain. Should you feel pain when you're doing this kind of stuff? Is that a signal that you're doing it wrong or in the wrong place? What would you tell people? How do they learn how to gauge that?
Well, in the book, I break down and differentiate good pain from bad pain. There's sort of a gradation of sensation, and I think a lot of us can agree on what bad pain feels like. It makes you wince. It makes you break out into negative emotion, like screaming or crying that's not processed crying. Sometimes there's weeping or crying because all of a sudden there's a sense of deep relief and release, right? So I want to differentiate between good emotion and bad emotion. So bad pain will also feel like explosive electricity, not like tingling like champagne bubble electricity. There's a difference when you are sort of attacking a hot nerve versus opening up, awakening peripheral nerve or sensory nerve sensation. So there's all sorts of differentiating of sensation that one needs to do to be able to be very clear about good pain versus bad pain. When you're rolling into tissues that have been adhesed, where fascias have been inappropriately glued together for years, it is not going to be comfortable. But you have to figure, you have to sort of differentiate between a comfortable discomfort and discomfortable discomfort. So, you know, there are signs that you're rolling on manageable discomfort was okay because after you roll, you feel better. You have this overall feeling of that ephemeral well-being. Your range of motion increases. There's a decrease in pain at the end range of motion. There is a feeling of emotional relief. There's a feeling of whole body release. So there are signs that the discomfort you were encountering was actually beneficial. When you encounter discomfort that's not beneficial, it hurts worse after you roll. It might hurt worse 24 hours after you roll. You face untenable emotions. So that would be the differentiator. And for the most part, I agree with Sue. It shouldn't cause pain when you roll. But if you're rolling on areas that have been in yoga tune-up and my methods, I call them body blind spots, areas of your body that have been so untended to for decades, you know, that literally is pain that's been there. You're not causing pain. That's pain that's just been waiting to be resolved. So the rolling shouldn't cause pain, but it sure is going to find areas that are at times painful. But I think you want to consider that with the scalability of sensation.
I'm sure I've heard Kelly Starrett talk about spending time in the pain cave before.
Yeah, and you know, Kelly has some terminology that I love so much. You know, he says it on our Treat While You Train video. I think he says, you know, if it's sketchy, if it feels sketchy, it's sketchy, get out.
Yeah, I've heard that, yeah.
You know,
definitely.
So, but then there are those people that, like, they don't necessarily listen. I mean, they push themselves to the nth degree. And I certainly cannot. I'm not a cop, and I'm not a ball monitor. So, you know, we can't, there are people that hurt themselves with kettlebells much worse than they hurt themselves with a therapy ball. So I do spend a lot of time wrestling with people's fears around self-treatment, but then they'll go out and run a 5K with their toes pointed out, and pay no attention to their form. And so it's like, well, are you going to run yourself to the ground running, or can you roll a rubber ball on your lower leg and let's see what happens?
And just for the listeners that maybe aren't aware, you and Kelly obviously did the Treat While You Train stuff together, as you mentioned. And you mentioned some terminology there, like the sketchy stuff that, you know, that you like from him. But there must be a few elements of movement or injury prevention or even sort of equipment recommendations that both of you disagree on.
Oh, yeah. Well, we wouldn't compliment each other if we didn't also come from, you know, a different origin story. You know, he's a hardcore athlete. I was a hardcore stretcher. I was a hardcore breather and a hardcore meditator. And, you know, he's a hardcore competitive athlete. Like, I have no desire to, you know, on my bucket list is not an endurance sport, like completing a marathon or triathlon. Or, you know, I admire all of you that do that, but it doesn't give me the type of pleasure that dancing gives me, and you know, some of the other movement arts that are athletic, but they're not, you know, you don't necessarily win a medal afterwards. So we definitely come from different, you know, which is great. We come from different boxes within the greater pie of movement.
And how does the Treat While You Train stuff differ from the stuff that you do individually, the stuff we've been talking about so far?
Well, the Treat While You Train DVD set is a pro set for any movement educator that wants to understand this principle of the interconnected body and how to treat it. So we detail anatomy. We have these really sweet anatomy lectures where we talk about anatomy for performance. We dive down into bone, joint, myofascial structure, fascia, and then the interrelationship to some sport, everyday movement, and because it's part of my pedagogy, is its relationship to breath and overall relaxation. And we have a amazing set. I call it surgical theater. We have this huge plexiglass table and two of the most gorgeous models on the planet, Greg Reed and Sarah Cush. And we put them on this table, and the cameras go all over so that you can see where the ball is moving on the body. You actually see it influencing the tissue. You'll see tissue shear and skin rolling. You'll see all the different techniques that we share in this DVD set. It's over 2 hours of content where you'll learn how to roll out pretty much every area of your body. So this really is the therapy ball rolling approach. Now, both Kelly and I teach movement practices, and the therapy ball stuff should help you to do your movement practice better. I'm never saying that, oh, you should just stick a ball on it just like you should take a pill and move on with your day. Like, the ball ultimately should help repattern you. So you want to be mindful of the treatment that you give yourself and incorporate that new awareness into your everyday movements and into your practice. I mean, both of us advocate this. It's not just, oh, one and done. This should be a mental rearranger, a body-mind rearranger, ultimately, of how you're holding yourself in life. And so that is where the Treat While You Train video and the Role Model book both essentially fall short, is that we don't offer in either of these products our whole movement system. There are many coaches out there that have been trained by Kelly, and I have over 300 teachers worldwide that teach yoga tune-up, so they teach you the holistic integrative approach to using therapy balls in the context of your movement practice so that your whole body is better, so you can live better in your body.
That's awesome. I do have to say, the plexiglass thing is so cool in those videos. It's like normally you can't see where the ball is and what's happening and how it's interacting with the body, you know, when someone's like, oh, lean against the wall. So the plexiglass thing, whoever thought of that, was really awesome.
Well, it was very expensive to build. And my husband, who is my business partner, was the mastermind of that. On the first video that we did, we have another video that's more consumer-friendly. The Treat While You Train, I would say, really is more professional-friendly, although our consumers who started with this therapy ball massage kit, many of them have graduated to the Treat While You Train kit because it's the next level. Treat While You Train, we're also developing it as an online CEC program, and it's just going to be able to satisfy the needs, K-N-E-A-D-S and the N-E-E-D-S, so many coaches and trainers out there who need to get CEC. So we're very, very close to launching the online CEC version of this, which will include a book of the approach as well as the video. And a question, you know, tests and everything. It's totally legit. Oh, so the first video we made, which is the on-demand massage kit, and it's on our website also, we used a glass door that we mounted, and we knew that we had to go next level and be able to actually show somebody rolling with their full body weight on top of the plexiglass. So that was the creation of that awesome surgical table.
Well, nice work. We're going to have to wrap it up today, but it's been really great chatting with you, and that's really great news about the continuing ed credits with that. Congratulations on making that happen. I definitely would recommend it to – yeah, I totally geeked out on this DVD. So so thank you for sharing your thoughts with us here today, and we really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us about all this.
Oh, lovely. It's been a pleasure. There's so much more to talk about. So any time, Becca, and thank you for your incredible review of the Treat While You Train kit. It was so considered. I just I deeply appreciate that, as well as for being a house for so many of Brooke Thomas's amazing pieces that have covered the Yoga Tune Up work and the Role Model book. I sincerely appreciate your support at Breaking Muscle. Big, big hugs to all of you.
Yes.
Absolutely, Jill. And mentioning the kits and the books there, like, where are the best places for people to get them? You know, where can they find out more about you and what you're talking about? Do you have any seminars coming up? Please feel free to give that kind of stuff a mention right now.
Yeah, absolutely. My website is yogatuneup.com, or you can go to our greater company website, tuneupfitness.com. The book, The Role Model, is available on Amazon. It's also available at Barnes & Noble and a bunch of Costco's all over Canada and I think Western U.S. Anyway, you can get the book online. My products are all available at yogatuneup.com. They are also, many of them are available on Amazon, but I know that the Amazon retailers charge a lot more than we do, so you can buy it from them or you can buy it for a lot less from us. There's also, you can find... Yeah, I mean, it's fine. I'm happy for retailers to be making the money, but if you want to save money, you should go to our website. The balls can also be purchased at different Equinox clubs around the country. There's a lot of different yoga studios. Yoga Works carries the Yoga Tune-Up balls. But if you want to get all sizes of the balls, you'd need to go to the website. Also, I'm on social media. I'm talking to Becca all the time on social media, so you find me at Yoga Tune-Up or Facebook. And then look for our teachers. Come to our website, and you can find teachers in Croatia, Sweden, Japan, China, all over the U.S., Canada, and Australia. We have more than 300 teachers worldwide, and we have trainings constantly in the Role Model Therapy Ball methods, as well as any of the different Yoga Tune-Up trainings. There's stuff happening constantly. My next big appearance actually is this weekend in San Diego at the Strength Matters Summit. I'm sure this will air before then, but I'll also be in the UK at Strength Matters, which is a strength summit, and I'll be at Australia at the Strength Summit, the same one in November. I'll be in Canada in April at the yoga conference. I mean, crazy schedule, but I'm leading trainings and conferences all over the place.
Awesome.
And go to yogatuneup.com and you can find me.
All right. Thank you. So from Breaking Muscle Radio to all of you, thank you for joining us for today's episode, and we hope to have you back for many more to come.